You know that the ice cream scoop can make a child smile, and that by slowing us down, the traffic light can keep us going. You know that the lawnmower makes life easier, that the blood bank makes life possible. But did you know all these ideas came from the minds of African Americans? Support the United Negro College Fund, because a mind is a terrible thing to waste. Visit uncf.org or call 1-800-332-UNCF. Brought to you by UNCF and the Ad Council.
Good morning and welcome to the second half of Saturday Mornings with Joy Keys. I'm your host, Joy Keys, and I want to thank you. If you listened to Sweet Honey in the Rock earlier, thank you so much for joining and waking up that early. And if you're just tuning in, right now we're going to be talking to two great authors of the book Shifting. Dr. Kumeya Shorter-Gooden, she's a licensed psychologist and a co-author, along with Sharice Jones, again, the book Shifting, The Double Lives of Black Women in America. I'm an African-American woman, for those of you who may or may not know that, and trust me, I understand about shifting. Sometimes I have to shift wearing different masks in the workplace, in relationships with men, and dealing with the community at large. We're constantly changing who we are. Sometimes that's a good thing as a coping mechanism, and other times it's really a bad thing and wearing on our souls and developing illnesses like high blood pressure, hypertension, and depression, and all types of things. So I think the authors are on the call now. Good morning. Good morning. Hi, good morning. Okay, well, maybe they haven't called in yet. I want to try to reach out to them. I'm going to call them. You can check out the book on Amazon, and on my page website, you can see the cover of the book, Shifting, and also Dr. Kumeya Shorter-Gooden and Sharice Jones. On the back of the book, Publishers Weekly said, urgent, compelling, and educational, a real contribution. In terms of Mary Pfeiffer, author of Reviving Ophelia, said Shifting is a thorough examination of the complex and nuanced lives of today's American black women, beautifully written and solidly researched. This is based on a research they did of about almost close to 400 women across the United States and questioning them about different areas of their lives in terms of how they deal with racism, sexism, how they're dealing with issues of body image. We also talk about a whole chapter in there called Can I Get a Witness about African-American women in the church. Let me see if this is them here.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning. Kumeya Shorter-Gooden on the phone.
Hi. Thank you so much for joining us, Dr. Shorter-Gooden. Good morning. Is this Sharice? I'm going to try to reach Sharice. I'm going to reach out to her. I'm going to call her out. Do you want to tell us what made you thought about starting this project, Dr. Shorter-Gooden? Can you hear me? I think we're having some little technical difficulties. Sometimes technology is your friend, and other times it's not your friend. Let me try to reach Sharice here. Good morning. Good morning.
Good morning. Can you hear me, Joy?
Yes, I can hear you. Is this Dr.
Okay.
Shorter-Gooden?
Yes, it is.
Okay. Why don't you tell us a little bit about the project
Absolutely.
You started, the research
Absolutely.
Project?
Absolutely. Sharice and I were really wanting to look at what it's like for African-American women to experience both racial and gender bias. We have to deal with the double jeopardy of racism and sexism. And so we set out to learn about how African-American women perceive bias and bigotry from both of those angles and how it impacts our lives at school, at work, in church, in the community, in our relationships with men as mothers, and also when we stand and gaze into the mirror. We really wanted to get a sense of what that's like. And what we learned is that African-American women spend a significant amount of emotional energy managing negative stereotypes, the biases, the assumptions.
Yes.
We spend a significant amount of time shifting, having to cope with, handle the messages that we aren't attractive, that we aren't competent or bright, that we are not good enough. And shifting has to do with the myriad of ways that we respond to bias. Sometimes it's obvious things like changing our hair. Kind of classic example that we heard was the son who was graduating from college and wanted to get a job at a Fortune 500 company. She was wearing locks, and she thought, no, I better cut them out, better, you know, straighten my hair, because that's going to play better when I go interview
downtown. Dr. Shorter,
downtown.
I think we have Sharice. I'm sorry, I just want to interrupt you real quick. I think Sharice is on the line. Sharice, can you hear us? I think she's going in and out there a little bit.
Okay.
But so, yeah, that's one of a very important issue in terms of let's start with the issue of body image and hair. I mean,
mm-hmm.
black women
mm-hmm.
in their hair is just a constant battle with themselves. I'm a black woman, with yourself, and then with the world outside. So you're battling like, okay, should it be straight? Should it be long? Should it be short?
Mm-hmm.
Should it be curly? Do I wear a kinky today? I have this meeting. And then, you know, what type of man is going to be attracted to me? So our hair is just—it seems to be so controlling aspect. How did the women deal with that? Tell me some of the stories they told you about their dealing with their hair.
We heard, you know, we heard just an array of stories about sisters dealing with their hair. There was a very, very competent, beautiful attorney who talked about how, as a child, she had grown up believing that only long, flowing hair was beautiful. And in spite of how bright she was and how much she kind of lived through the Black is Beautiful movement, it was hard to get those messages out of her head. She refused to do anything in the work world unless she absolutely made it to her every Saturday morning appointment where she got her hair straightened.
Mm.
And obviously that's a choice that everyone can make, but what was hard about that was that she really felt ugly.
Yeah.
She really felt ugly, and yet the world didn't see her that way.
Sharice,
so
is that you? Are you there? Let me see. Sharice, can you hear us now? It's for some reason, Sharice is just, we cannot get in touch with her. But in terms of that every Saturday morning, I remember my grandmother making my mother, well, not making her, but in a sense, behind her back, taking me to the hair salon to get my hair straightened, and my mother didn't want me to get my hair straightened.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't get a relaxer in my hair until after I was out of high school, because my mom and my father, Black Power, you know, the natural, and they did not want any chemicals in my hair. But
mm-hmm.
for me, I think I really love India Reed's song, and you know, that I am not my hair. You know,
mm-hmm.
that it doesn't define me if my hair is straight or long or curly or kinky or dark or light or blonde. It's what I'm doing, I think, and what I'm bringing to the world and to humanity is that it's important. I want to read something from your book. This is in terms of women, Black women in the classroom. This is from Shifting, The Roots of Shifting. Again, they have a wonderful book that you all should check out, and it's based on the African American Women's Voices Project. It says, when I walk into the classroom that first day, I feel like I come in with something to prove already, like I'm already set back by the way people are perceiving me. They're wondering why I'm here. Am I really smart enough to be in class? Last semester, there were only 8 people in my biology class, and after the first couple of assignments, I felt I had to work extra hard, and this is something, you know, I might even put this on my daughter, you know.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You got to be better than them. You got to go out there and prove yourself. And maybe that's undue pressure on a child, especially on an African American girl child. As you said, we're wearing a double, I guess, cloak with the racism and sexism. Well, let's try Sharice one more time. I see her trying to call in. Good morning, Sharice. Can you hear us? She still can't hear us. I can't hear her. I'm gonna try to call out to her. In terms of the educational system, you're a wonderfully accomplished professor, you know, teacher, educator. How do you feel when you were going to school and dealing with that issue?
It's been a struggle throughout my education and can continue to be a struggle as a person who's a professor and an administrator at the university. I mean, one of the interesting things is that African Americans who have the opportunity to be in educational settings or work settings that are predominantly white, and sometimes those settings
huh?
provide some opportunities.
Okay, I think we got Sharice. I'm sorry.
Yay!
Can you hear us, Sharice?
I can. I've heard you the whole time. I just
okay.
you couldn't hear me.
Yay! Technology, I love it.
Glad you're here, Sharice.
Yeah, I'm glad to be here.
Let me just tell the audience, this is Charisse Jones. We've been trying to get her on the call. Sometimes technology is not your friend, but finally we got her. She's the co-author of Shifting the Double Lives of Black Women in America. This was a winner of the 2004 American Book Award. She is a veteran reporter who is currently a national correspondent for USA Today. She was previously a staff writer for the New York Times. Good morning. Thank you so much for calling
in. Good morning. Thank you. I'm sorry it took a while, but we got it.
We got there.
Let me tell people a little bit more about Dr. Shorter Gooden. She is a professor and system-wide director of international multicultural initiatives at Alliant International University. Dr. Shorter Gooden has served as the director of the Mansour Counseling Center at the Claremont Colleges and as a clinical director of the Community Mental Health Council in Chicago. She's, again, very accomplished. We were just discussing, Charisse, about the issue of black women in education and going into the classroom and having to prove yourself. Go ahead, Dr. Shorter Gooden. You were talking about your own personal experience with that matter.
Absolutely. I actually had the experience of being one of two black girls to integrate a high school, and so it was in these issues were in very bold relief. But many African American women have to deal with walking into settings that are predominantly non-black and feeling like they have to disprove the stereotypes that we're not as smart as, not as competent as. And it's a backdrop. It's something that we kind of carry with us, this need to show them that they're wrong. And it takes energy. It takes a toll. It's stressful having to be hypervigilant to watch out for any inkling that people see us in a stereotypical way,
mm-hmm.
to work extra, extra hard in order to undo that.
But one of the things you talk about in your book is you call it scanning, surveying, and scrutinizing. They make split-second decisions on whether to challenge an opinion or whether to work overtime to disprove the myth that black women are lazy or go home to spend time with their children. This is from, again, Shifting the Double Lives of Black Women in America, whether to wear that DKNY suit or should they wear the African robe they love to the office Christmas party. So, Charisse, how did you connect with Dr. Shorter Gooden on this project?
You know, we always tell everybody that we were an arranged marriage. It worked out fantastic. And basically our agent brought us together. I had come up with an idea where I wanted to write about black women and tell our stories, but really wanted someone who had a very clinical eye that could, give that perspective. And he had heard Kamea speak at a conference and was blown away. And we met over breakfast at Georgia Brown's in Washington, D.C., and we bonded. And, relationships like this can be very problematic because it really is. It's like
problematic? Marriage. Uh-oh, what's going on?
It can be, but ours wasn't. I mean, we really, we both, were hard workers, and we really thought alike. And it was really, it worked out well, and I think you see it on the page, that, behind the scenes, it was very tranquil, and, we were very touched by the stories that we heard, and I think it's why so many people that read Shifting are also very moved, because so many women have told us, now I know I'm not crazy, now I know there's a name for it, and so it's really been an incredible experience.
Dr. Shorter Gooden, one of the unique things in the book that I found very interesting, and maybe because the way I was raised to be aware of different issues, but a lot of the women, or like almost 90%, had experienced racism. They admitted to experiencing racism initially when you interviewed them. But the issue of sexism, they were not familiar with that label, or was that what was going on before? Oh, is that what is called sexism? Talk a little bit about that, Dr. Shorter Gooden.
Yeah, that's something that struck us as well. And it made sense to us, given that for African-American women, race and racism is usually the primary issue. I mean, we've fought with our brothers and fathers and sisters for, of course, generations for racial equality. But I think because of that, we often don't connect the dots. We often don't see where gender bias seeps in. And particularly, we often don't see it if that gender bias comes from someone who has skin color similar to us. So there's a whole issue about not being able to call it out if we are treated in a sexist manner by a brother, if we're sexually harassed or abused by a black man. And we spoke to sisters who had been, for example, sexually harassed
by a brother on the job. In one case, it was the brother who was the highest ranking administrator in an agency, and she couldn't bring herself to go in and speak to the HR director, because how could she do that to this man, even though this was a traumatic and chronic experience for her? She eventually quit. So there are a lot of issues around us being able to really acknowledge as an African-American community that gender bias is real and impacts our sisters and our brothers.
Well, it's interesting,
right?
Because it saddens me. I did an interview with a young lady who did a movie called No, the Rape Documentary, and she interviewed many people, and women in particular, who were in the African-American, you know, movement to fight racism, thinking they're standing side by side by this great brother, you know, who, you know, is out there fighting the man, so to speak, and yet then turn around and they get raped by this man.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to tell people, I always say this on my show, I love brothers. I love black men. Unfortunately, I also want brothers out there to call their brothers on what they're doing wrong, when they're being sexist toward a woman, when they're being disrespectful toward a woman. They may not even know, just as women are not aware that, oh, is that what that is? Is that what's happening to me? Is that what's going on? Men, you need to talk to your brothers that's on your left and your right and say, hey, chill out on that, you know?
Right,
but
right.
That's a very important issue. I want to read something from your book in terms of the issue of sexism and how slight it can be sometimes. You may not, you know, just again, may not be aware. Maya, a 39-year-old director of a neighborhood development center in Chicago, recounts that when she attended her first meeting of the predominantly black board of directors, the president, a black man named Turner, announced, "We have two of our women here today. We wanted to get diverse. So we have two of our women in here, and I'd like the two women of ours to stand up."
Mm-hmm.
I'd like the two women of ours to stand up. Now, what they do in the book here for the listeners is they switch it, and she says, well, what if we say we have two of our blacks in here? I would like to have our blacks stand up now.
Right.
Now it doesn't sound right.
Yeah, exactly. You know, and sexism so suffuses the culture, the popular culture. I mean, when you think about the misogyny in rap music and how we've kind of accepted that. And Kamea and I call, you know, racism the granddaddy of all isms. And to speak about any other kind of bias is often looked at as being disloyal to the black community in general and to black men in particular. And to what you both have said already, we have to get out of that mindset, because it uplifts everybody if we root out abusive behavior and disrespect. And it's something that I think we are still grappling with, and our young people are very much affected by it, as I said, by, you know, the popular culture and the images that they see. And so I think it's something we've got to talk about with our young people.
Dr. Shorter Good, and one of the other issues that I think is kind of unspoken in the black community, especially with black women, is eating disorders. And that goes with how in the book you discuss black women and their beauty image. I did a show recently also about African-American women and eating disorders. A young woman had written a book about binging. Let's talk about something positive. How can black women who are shifting, Dr. Shorter Good, and deal with these issues? What are some positive coping mechanisms they can use to deal with the racism, the sexism, the body image? What are some things they can do on a daily basis?
Mm-hmm. That's a great point. One of the things that Charisse and I say is we each need to do a shifting assessment, a shifting self-assessment. We need to ask ourselves, how do we manage bias and bigotry? What do we do? What are our coping strategies? Because we all have to find a way to manage it. But what's most problematic is when the way that we're managing it is one that we're not aware of and possibly damaging. So it can really help to stop and say, is it working? Is this job working? Or do I feel like a hole in my stomach every time I walk through the office door? And if so, what can I do about that? Obviously, we can't just jump up and quit a job, but maybe I can put some things in motion to make a difference. We need to do a lot to really strengthen the values and the very positive values from our community. One of the issues around eating disorders that you mentioned is that the African-American community has been very affirming of an array of body sizes and types. That's our history, and that's what we've gotten from the motherland, and that's what we've carried with us until fairly recently when that's begun to erode. So a couple of decades ago, it was somewhat rare to find an African-American girl or woman who was anorexic or bulimic. It happened, mm-hmm. but it wasn't common. It's much, much more common today because the messages from the broader community,
magazines,
say
from
you've
media,
be
from
thin.
The right, you
exactly,
know, from the
that say you got to be thin, have
yes.
gotten through, and we've bought into it, and we're no longer buffering those messages with our more positive notions that beauty comes in all shapes and sizes.
Well, I want to speak to the issue of women and women. Sharice, you mentioned about your relationship with Dr. Shorta Gooden. We as women sometimes, as black women, have a difficulty dealing with each other. And in the book, you discuss the issue of class is a very
mm-hmm.
important issue. We as African Americans have become much more successful now, and we can be seen in a variety of you know, corporations and businesses, and maybe not in the familiar places, but we're there, we're CEOs, we're SVPs. And we went to school or high school maybe with someone, and maybe they didn't achieve as much. And monetarily, they're not where you are, but you're still friends. In the book, you talk about that clash. How, Sharice, tell me some stories, tell the audience some stories you heard of women dealing with that clash or trying to maintain their friendships but still living a certain lifestyle. Talk about that a little bit.
Yeah, you know, we, you know, one of the things we talk about is that, you know, we have to do a lot of shifting when we're dealing with the broader community, the white community. But we also have to do a lot of shifting when we come home. We have to shift a lot within our own communities in terms of how we speak or how we deal with others. And so the comfort zone that we so need after going out and kind of trying to navigate these other spaces is not always there. And so, you know, we spoke to women who talked of the pain they felt when they were rejected by people who looked like them, you know, women who perhaps didn't speak the King's English and went to a function, you know, a First Fridays or a meeting of some sort, and were looked down upon by the other people there because they didn't speak a certain way and they were assumed to not be educated. It also goes the other way. You know, people get into this idea of black authenticity. And so, therefore, if you talk a certain way, well, she talks like a white girl. Mm. You know, we heard that from
a tremendous number. I got that the whole time I was growing up. I talk like a white girl. This is the only way I know how to speak. And I shift sometimes when I go into certain other environments with black people. I shift because I'm fearful that I won't be accepted. If I don't shift,
exactly.
then I'm going to be isolated. I'm going to be ostracized, and they won't be my friend. And I'm a 40-year-old woman, but I still shift.
Absolutely.
You know, when I go into a certain store, if I'm in a certain neighborhood, I shift. Now, also, I'll tell you, I'm in theater, and I'm part of member of SAG and all that stuff. So as an actress, it may be easier for me. But it's still one of the things that you talk about in the book. It erodes a little bit of myself. I'm not my authentic self all the time. And it kind of hurts a little sometimes not to be able to be authentic, you know.
And that's the issue. I mean, it's fine to be able to be multilingual, which is what black people are. You know, we speak in various voices. And that's fine if it allows you to communicate with different people. The problem is when you become ashamed of one of those voices or two of those voices, or when you do it, if you feel uncomfortable doing it, if it is something that is eroding you and beating you down. And that's why, you know, so many women we spoke to, I mean, many women in the workplace talked about how they finally got to a point where they had to try to carve out a space where they could be more whole. And
mm-hmm.
whether it's, you know, leaving the job if they can do it, and I know in a recession that's a tough thing to do. You want to hold on to where you are. But even if you've got to stick with that job, then you've got to find other outlets, whether
yeah.
it's going to a poetry jam, you know, when you get off
listening
work.
To music. You can listen to Sweet Honey and the Rock.
Sweet Honey and the Rock.
That's right. Yeah. That's right.
Sweet Honey and the Rock. I just had them on the show. That's a wonderful singing group. And if you need some peace and a balm, so to speak, definitely listen to music. I want to read a part of your book where you talk about black women in the church. Because we're talking about where can we go for solace, and the church is definitely a large part of that. There are a lot of many other religious institutions that black women go to. And not everyone is a Christian. They may be a Muslim, could be Buddhist, but spirituality is important. Let me read this here. We were both the same age, but they were always investing in him spiritually, backing him and giving him the kind of support that he needed. But I was getting nothing. What was I getting? Your skirt is too short. You need to come to class so we can teach you how to be a minister's wife. And I was like, who told you I wanted to be a minister's wife? But that's what they did. And I felt that they were always wanting me to be more subservient and he could be the hero. Dr. Shorter Gooden, talk about this issue.
Big issue. In our you know, very significant sample, several women were ministers or studying to be ministers, and of course many other women were active in the Christian church and involved in church communities. And the issue of sexism came through very loud and clear, and it's a context in which it can sometimes be particularly hard for black women to name it, to call it out, because it can seem like they're being disrespectful of the church or of the pastor, and yet it's a huge entrenched issue, sometimes causing, we heard stories from a couple of sisters who'd left the church, one sister who struggled whether she was going to go back and preach at the Baptist church she'd grown up in, because in that context she wouldn't be allowed to stand in the pulpit, she'd have to be down on the floor, and really
yes.
anguishing about that decision. Do I go back and offer them what I can and bring a message in the word, or do I take a stand and say no because this is demeaning of me?
Dr. Shorter Gooden, I want to thank you both so much. We only have 1 minute left. You all who are listening must pick up the book, Shifting, The Double Lives of Black Women in America. They have a website, blackwomenshifting.com. Again, blackwomenshifting.com. Today, you just heard me speak with Dr. Kumeya Shorter Gooden. She's a licensed psychologist and the co-author of the book. Also, Sharice Jones. She is a correspondent at USA Today. I want to thank both of you ladies for coming on today. Wonderful book, definitely needed. Continue the work, and please stay in touch. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Absolutely. Thanks for the opportunity.
Thank you. All the listeners, if you're just tuning in, again, this was blackwomenshifting.com is the website. You can go find out more about the book. It's a wonderful story. And also you can follow me on Twitter, twitter.com/joykeys, or you can become a fan of Saturday Mornings with Joy Keys by going to Facebook. So please join Twitter, join Facebook, mark the show as a favorite. If you missed early this morning, I had Sweet Honey and The Rock on. I'm going to leave with some Sweet Honey and The Rock. It's a wonderful singing group. Please check them out, sweethoneyandtherock.org. Have a wonderful Saturday.
The day since you've been gone, it was just like a dream. I still can't feel it now. I'm still in disbelief. I know you won't come back. I know somehow you're here. I tried to settle down, not in my life.